Welcome and hello, everybody. This is the REI Society Podcast, where we are informing you everything real estate and business related so that you can be successful in REI investing. We're sharing the tools, tips, and stories from people who have already made it. And my name is Brandon Thompson, your host. Each week, we'll bring extraordinary guests so that you can learn real estate from the best. Mr. Michael Hearn, how are you doing today?
Large and in charge, man. Doing perfectly great.
Man, I wish I had that the beautiful bald head like you, man. I don't, but I'm glad. If I did have the confidence you did 10 years ago, I'd have shaved that shit off because I've got three hair transplants and micropigmentation on my crown and in my scar line. I could have saved myself $40,000 by just doing what you did.
You know, if you didn't tell me, I would have never known. You look good, brother. You look good.
Oh, man. Thank you. Well, just so you guys know, Michael Hearn is a licensed mortgage broker, CEO of My Fresh Credit, a board certified credit consultant, and a member of Kappa Alpha Psi fraternity. He is a Michigan native and a graduate of Michigan State University. So other than that, tell us a little bit about yourself, Mike.
Well, what I like to do is help people. That's always been my mission in life. And I got into the mortgage business pre-2000K. I got into 1999. I started as a mortgage broker, really not knowing what I was doing. And I progressed in my career, really understanding the market and understanding how to help people. Right. So in early 2000s, I was working with a company called Home Bank. And Home Bank was a phenomenal company. We were a big bank located here in the Southeast. And after that, the mortgage industry collapsed. It was the big meltdown of 07, 08. So I stayed in the business, actually. I turned into a mortgage broker. I stayed in the business as long as I could. But eventually, all the capital dried up. So I had to exit the mortgage business for a couple years. And when I did, I started up my company, My Fresh Credit. And my goal was to help consumers get out of credit problems and help them repair their credit when they have credit issues. Mm-hmm. And the biggest issue that I was finding with folks is a lack of knowledge. People just didn't know how to fix their credit. They didn't know the rules of credit. So I took people by the hand, started helping them repair their credit and fix it. And eventually, actually last year, I decided to actually get my mortgage license reactivated. I got back into the mortgage business last year as a mortgage broker, and here I am. So now I get to help people, educate them on financial literacy, help them fix their credit, and help them get financing for the homes. So I work probably, 18, 19 hours a day. And that's not because, you know, I'm super duper busy and I have to. Because I love to. I love this business. I love helping folks.
That's awesome, man. I remember when we were working together back prior to the recession. Yep. And it was, about the time you entered the space is the time I entered the space. Is that about, right around that 2003 mark? 2004? Right.
Yeah. That was 2003 when you and I met.
Man, that was quite a bull market back then. I had just entered the space as a real estate agent and got to the point where I was really enjoying working with homeowners. You were the first mortgage banker I worked with. You were feeding us Chick-fil-A biscuits. I was getting overweight. Every time I go into this company called Your Home Superstore, this brokerage I used to work with, Michael Hearn had biscuits there, and it was just awesome. But yeah, I remember back in the day. Yeah, you really do care, and you helped me with a ton of different clients. You helped me get them into homes as first time home buyers. And it was awesome, man. I mean, you have a knack for reading credit. You've got a knack for helping people with credit repair. And you saved me a lot of deals that were probably harder than they were easy and made me a lot of money. So I wanted to say thank you for that.
Absolutely. But you know what? Let me interject. Back then, here's the crazy thing. Back then in 03, rates were probably hovering around 6.5%. Mm. Think about that for a second. For owner-occupied property, rates were great at around 6%. Now, juxtapose that till today, our rates are probably, FHA is about 2.875%. Right. So rates are phenomenal. But when you tell someone, oh, rates went up to 3% or 3.5%, they freak out. You know why? Because they're not comparing it relatively to back what happened not even 15 years ago. We were at 6.5%. So it's a very unusual climate that we're in right now. Yeah. But rates are great. And back then, back in those days, I was probably 4 years into the business. And I cut my teeth on really helping, I call them the underserved. Mm-hmm. And you know, you mentioned me saving some deals. Well, there's a lot of deals where lenders wouldn't touch. If they had bad credit, they wouldn't touch it. But I knew the guidelines would fit them into certain situations, got them approved with bad credit and everything without putting into a subprime loan. I put them in the FHA all day long because it made sense. Right. It was a lot of fun back there. And you know, one of the things, Brandon, really I got a lot of joy from was when you take a person who maybe has been a generational renter and get them into a house and have their own house and they no longer rent, dude, it was the biggest, they had the biggest appreciation for what you did for them. I had a passion and made me happy that I was helping someone become a homeowner. It's a great time. It was a great time then. Now things are a little bit different, but it's still great. It just is.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people are freaking out about the market, but I think this is one of the best markets to be in. What do you think?
It is. I mean, we're at an all-time low interest rates. Interest rates are at an all-time low. We hover, you know, 3.5%, maybe 4% on certain programs. Interest rates are, you know, doing this. And here's the crazy thing that, you know, last Sunday, the Fed met as with an emergency meeting and decided to drop interest rates to close to 0%, right? Okay. Yep. I get about 82 phone calls and texts saying, hey, Mike, I want one of those 0% interest rates.
I was one and, of them.
Oh, yeah. And one of the things is, you know, we talk about financial literacy and education. We had to educate. So fast forward to today that, you know, the programs are still there. They're still great. Interest rates are outstanding. So when the rates come down like they have, you've got the ability to buy more house. Mm-hmm. So when you compare a 6% rate to a 3.5% rate or a 3% rate, your buying power actually increases. So the market is ripe. It's a great time to buy. You can still buy a house. And then think about the interest rates now. It's a very volatile environment. So traditionally speaking, interest rates on the mortgages would follow the Treasury bill. So when the Federal Reserve met on Sunday, it was an emergency meeting. They dropped the Fed funds rate down to almost zero. But what people didn't realize, and the media halfway understood this, that the Fed funds rate really did not control mortgages. It's a loose relationship between the two. Mm-hmm. Mortgage-backed securities usually follow the Treasury bill in a normal world. But in this environment that we're experiencing now, up is down and right is left, this is not normal. So what we used to follow certain matrices and certain indexes, we no longer do that. So now what we're doing is it's a knee-jerk environment. So we will literally see interest rates go up and down on the mortgage side 4 or 5 different times. We'll get an alert saying rates are up, rates are down, rates are up, rates are down. Why? There's no rhyme or reason. So and what I like to tell the clients is that, look, rates are going up, going down, but rates are great. They're still going to stay low. We're going to see little small indolations every day, but rates are still still great. And in my opinion, and an opinion of a lot of really, you know, a lot smarter people than I am, we'll never, Brandon, see interest rates in the 6% again. Not in my lifetime. There's a lot of reasons for that, but rates are always going to be low for a long, 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 long time.
They have to be. And then on top of that, you know, my opinion right now with the economy, I think it's the perfect time for a renter to apply for a mortgage. Start working on your credit right now. Like rents are at an all-time high, but mortgage rates are at an all-time low.
Yeah.
Like why wouldn't you clean your credit up to become somebody that has accomplished the American dream that we also strive after? Like if you're paying $1,400 a month on a 1,400 square foot home here in Atlanta. I know that's not universal for like California or New York,
but right. Yeah,
I'm talking about Atlanta-based because that's where I'm from. Why wouldn't they go get a mortgage on that same home and pay $800 a month? Like, it just befuddles me. Like, people are still stuck in that mentality. Like, now you need to get those tax incentives and clean your credit up and right. buy. And I'm hoping America wakes up. I don't know. What do you think about that? I know you think that all renters should eventually become homeowners.
You know what I found? There's probably three things that are preventing renters from moving over to homeownership. I think the most important thing is mindset. And unfortunately, a lot of folks out there have a renter mindset because they are victims of being generational renters. Their parents may have rented, their grandparents may have rented, and that can be the only thing that they know is to rent. And that they may not know there's any other options out there. They may just think homeownership is not for you. So the number one problem, I think, is the mindset of being generational renters. The second obstacle is credit. So a lot of folks have credit concerns. And the third obstacle is down payment. And a lot of folks haven't saved up for a down payment. And some folks out there don't know that you can actually get into a house for nothing. We got 100% financing again. It's back.
Does that scare you though? Does that make you feel like we're back in 2007 again?
No, there's no direct correlation between the amount of down payment and the default rate. It's just not. But what it does is it removes obstacles. It removes obstacles. So for folks out there who don't have a down payment, you know, there's down payment assistance programs. It's different from what happened, pre-meltdown. So it's a little bit different, but it's a prime program. You get into an FHA mortgage with down payment assistance and not worry about putting a down payment. And credit concerns, you know, we've got programs where you go down to a 500 credit score with a FHA mortgage. A 500 credit score. We've got VA programs where there's no credit score requirement for VA for veteran borrowers. Right. And the great thing about that is like, look, dude, I'm the biggest proponent of VA loans. Vets are out there. They serve. They put their lives on the line. Thank you for your service. So those home loan benefits are out there. And the VA itself says a third of veterans do not know how to use their VA home loan benefits. And VA is hands down the very best mortgage program out there. It's 100% financing, 100% financing. And rates are phenomenal. It's 2.8, 3%. Rates are phenomenal with no down payment, no PMI. It does have a funding fee. So if you're a vet and you need to get a VA loan, you do have to pay a 2.1% funding fee. And that means basically if your house is the house that you're buying is $200,000, then you have to put, they have to roll in a funding fee of 2%, which is, you know, say $4,000. That gets rolled into the mortgage.
Is that kind of like an additional loan origination fee or is that?
No, it's just a fee that goes to VA. It gets rolled into the loan amount. You finance it. So you're financing $4,000 over 30 years at 3%, where your payment goes up $2 a month.
Yeah, you still get the benefits though. That's great.
You get a benefit. And the cool thing about VA that if you served and you're eligible for your benefits, and if you have a disability rating from the VA for 10% or more, you save. They waive the funding fee. Mm-hmm. So, dude, that's huge. And there's a lot of borrowers, veteran borrowers, who have been have the disability rating, they waive that funding fee. So on a $200,000 house, you just save $4,000. On a $300,000 house, you save $6,000. So it's a phenomenal program. Programs are out there for people. You know, down payments should not be an obstacle. That's just the bottom line. It's time to buy.
Yeah, it is. You know, what I like about you is you're a teacher. And, that's what I've always liked about you. You know, I was dealing with, prior to the recession with home buyers, when I was practicing real estate, you taught people how to do this a lot. So I'm going to ask you some questions and I want you to teach. Put you on the spot, Mike. Is that good?
Yeah, bring it on, baby.
So tell us why real estate ownership is an important component of wealth building.
Great question. Real estate ownership is the first step to wealth building. If you look at all the wealth in the U.S., over 95% of so-called wealthy people have some sort of real estate investments in their portfolio. Mm-hmm. If you put your money in the bank with your 401k or with Chase or whomever, they're going to invest in real estate. That's where your money is going, in real estate. If you want to invest your 401k, here's the crazy thing. When you look at your 401k statement, you see where it's been diversified at, you know, by a fund manager. They haven't invested it, you know, in US stocks, foreign stocks, you know, bonds, whatever. One thing they don't allow you to invest in your 401k is real estate. But the bank is investing in real estate. Right. Is that crazy talk?
That's nuts.
So that tells you the banks know how to make money. And that's where real estate starts as well. You know, there was a famous person that once said, don't buy your second car until you buy your first house.
I bet
you feel me on that?
Oh yeah, that's I completely agree. I bet a lot of Americans aren't even doing that, but
yeah.
Keep going.
Let me finish answering your question. So the reason real estate is the path for wealth is, look, real estate is going to continually appreciate. In any market you're in, real estate will appreciate. So it's the one thing that everyone requires. It's shelter. So you started investing in real estate. And Brandon, you are an investment mentor. You are an investment coach. You are an investor yourself. You teach people how to do this. But I'm actually talking about the very first investment is your own home. So you got to invest in yourself because all the money that you're putting into the house will go towards equity eventually. So it really is the first step to wealth. And there's a lot of different strategies you can do. Once you buy that first house, live in that house and then look at investing in other houses. Or, you know, crazy talk, you can buy a house, live in it for a year or so and move on to another house, keep that one. Now you have a rental property. Now you've got legitimate passive income.
Yeah.
That's the key to wealth building, really starting with that first house. Buy your first house before you buy your second car.
Okay, so in order to buy your first house, you have to know the rules of credit. So what are some rules for credit, keeping your credit clean and making sure you can buy?
So the rules of credit is something that we were not taught in school. Like, were you taught that? Did somebody teach you in school what the rules of credit are?
Hell no.
No, and I think like people who know, who are enlightened about the rules of credit, learned either from their own, or they learn through generational teaching, their parents or grandparents. And dude, I'll tell you, there's a direct correlation for folks with kids, with parents who have good credit, and their kids are highly likely to have good credit as well. I just had a client come to me yesterday, and I took care of her. She has 780 credit, almost 800, and she referred her son to me as well. And hey, Natanya. Hey, Dave, thanks for joining in. Hey, Alita, thanks for joining. But she offered her son, you know, to get financing as well. This joker had the same credit score. So it's a teaching of generational wealth. But the rules of credit are not taught in school. And I like to tell folks all the time, yo, the cards are stacked against you. If you don't know the rules of credit, you're going to fail. You're not going to win the game. So the funny thing is, businesses and creditors and banks actually make more money off you if you have lower credit. If you have lower credit, you're actually going to make the bank more money if you got bad credit. Why? Because they can charge you higher interest rates. Right. And a lot of folks don't realize if you have poor credit, what's it called? Your car insurance is going to be higher. They're going to rate you based on your credit. That's a risk factor. You're going to have higher car insurance, almost as twice as much. Your premium's almost going to be twice as much as someone with good credit. So the rules of credit are kind of set up with five different categories. The main thing I tell folks to concentrate on is, number one, look at your payment history. And your payment history makes up the good, the bad, the ugly. Everything you've ever paid on time, not on time, late, collections, repos, that all affects your payment history. And that's like 200 possible points of your FICO score. And that's a huge portion. 200 points is based on your payment history. And there's another huge category called your credit utilization. Your credit utilization is based on how much of your credit cards that you're using. So the lower, the better, right? So if you have a $5,000 credit limit, you really shouldn't be using more than $500 of that $5,000 to get the best score possible. So credit utilization, payment history, those two things together make up almost 2/3 of your credit score. So we're talking 400 possible points. So if your score is low, what you need to do is look at that payment history. You can go to a lot of different places to see your credit score. You can go to, you know, annualcreditreport.com. You can go to creditscorecard.com, creditsesame.com, even Credit Karma if you want to use that crap.
Credit Samurai, is that a website? It should be if it isn't.
there's a lot out there. But the thing is, go get your credit report, see what's on there. If you see some inaccuracies, you've got a right to dispute your credit. And the credit disputing process, I mean, it's almost like having an attorney argue your case. We're not trying to argue if you are guilty or not guilty. We're trying to show reasonable doubt. So credit reporting, credit bureaus have certain criteria that they have to report your credit. So it's not a matter if you were if you really were in collections with Verizon or not. It's about, is Verizon reporting that that trade line accurately to your credit? And the FTC's already said 80% of Americans have inaccuracies on their credit reports. So that's key. Those two things right there: credit utilization, pay your credit cards down, payment history, see what's on there, get into a dispute process. And I have a company, MyFreshCredit.com. I help folks fix their credit. And, you know, a lot of things that I do, you know, it ain't about the money all the time. It's about educating people and teaching them the rules of credit. So I do free counseling sessions with folks, you know, 15 minute counseling session with a, you know, with me. And, you know, they go to MyFreshCredit.com, sign up for a session. It's a free session. We'll go over your file and figure out what's going on. And dude, I give away free advice all the time. Like if I look at you and I look at your file, you don't need help. You just need to do this, this, and this. But there's some folks out there that are like FUBAR. All my veterans know what FUBAR means. If they're in that situation, the last two words are beyond all recognition. The first two you can think about. But if they are beyond help and they got, then I'll bring them on. I can help them fix their credit, give them guidance. So some folks really need help. So look, long answer short, the rules of credit are very complicated. The cards are stacked against you. Learn, get some knowledge. There's tons of free stuff out there on the internet, on YouTube. You know, be careful about who you learn from. Some folks are just snake sales.
Yeah.
But go on MyFreshCredit.com. Check out my website. You know, I've got tons of information out there. Reach out to me if you need help.
Yeah, what I like about this is credit. You can learn the rules of credit and help yourself as an investor. Help yourself leverage your credit so that you can compound wealth over time. So for like me, I've had probably almost 100 rental homes over the last almost 20 years.
Yep.
Bought and sold at different points of time. Had a bunch in my own personal name with my own credit report. Had a bunch in my wife's credit report. And joint ventures, this and that. But you can utilize your credit to amass wealth. And the wealth building part, specifically for a lot of my audience, is like, if you don't understand this, like there's so much you can do to build your dreams in a responsible way. So what's something you could add to that for investors, for real estate investors?
Yeah, I mean, I'm being careful about what I say. And let me just respond to this. Dave, great point. David mentioned that building credit, you know, he's added his kids to his account as an authorized user. That's a phenomenal approach. That's called piggybacking. And you can really help people with poor credit or non-established credit improve their credit or get a good credit rating by adding them to your credit card as an authorized user. So that's an outstanding tactic. And I teach a lot of different tactics like that. So good point, Dave. But credit is leverage. Okay. And to all the Dave Ramsey fans out there, God bless you. Bless your heart.
I think he's good for people that are going to work a 9-to-5 job and they don't really care to amass wealth. They're just okay being content and set in their ways. But for somebody that's a little bit more entrepreneurial, I'm not going to stop going to Starbucks. Right now I might be because they're forcing me to. They only have the drive-through window open. You know, quarantine, you know, we're amid the COVID-19 crisis. But other than that, I'm not going to stop going to get my latte. I don't care if it costs a latte. I want my freaking latte. So I'm going to create wealth so that it affords my lifestyle the way I want. I like traveling around the world, you know, like James Bond. My freaking wealth, my property has got to pay for me to do this. So,
And you know what, Brandon, you did an Instagram video on that. I remember seeing that when you talked, I'm not going to give up my Starbucks. You know what that's called? That's called not having a scarcity mindset. So saving 20 cents on a freaking loaf of bread is not going to make you secure and wealthy. That's the wrong mindset. Folks out there, I'm sorry, what'd you say?
What about all the toilet paper hoarders right now?
All the toilet paper holders. Invest in stocks, not toilet paper. But for folks who want to like pay with cash and thinks credit is evil, that's not the case. Credit is leverage. So if you use credit wisely, you can actually amass wealth. Think about this. Think about Walmart. Walmart is number one, number two retailer in the world. I don't know if Amazon is taking them, but just use Walmart as number one big box retailer in the world, right? They have, I don't know, dude, I don't know what their annual revenue is. I'm sure it's in the hundreds of billions. But there's no way Walmart can amass that much revenue and cash flow without using credit as leverage. Obviously, they use it as a higher level, but they can use credit to buy products to sell to the public and pay after the transaction is done. That's no different from what we do in our lives as regular, you know, Joe the plumber type folks. Right. So we use credit as leverage, which means you can buy real estate. So think about this for a moment. If you are wanting to buy a house and you've got 3% down, you can actually buy a house, a $200,000 house or $150,000 house for like $4,500 out of your pocket. You can even go into your 401k that's lost 22% month over month and pull that money out as a loan and use it as your down payment. So you can leverage your credit to buy an asset worth $200,000 or $150,000 for $4,500. Now you just leverage your credit, right? And did a 50x investment.
Man.
So let that stew for a moment. That's what credit leverage is, using it responsibly. And I'm not talking about going out and buy you an iPhone 11, right? Why do you need an iPhone 11? You don't own a house. Let me stop. So we're talking about being wise with your credit. Credit leverage is phenomenal. And there are ways to build your credit up so you are a credit-worthy borrower. There's ways to fix that. There's tweaks to the game. You know, I've taken one borrower, one client of mine in December. He had like, dude, zero, literally zero credit. He like, old dude too, wasn't a kid. He was like in his 50s. He was just a cash buyer. Yeah. And I said, okay, come on, let's get you some credit leverage. He's a business owner too. So I took him literally from zero to a 768 credit score. And now he has $22,000 of credit leverage. And now we're going to get him business credit in the 6 more months. So we're going to mass him about $100,000 of leverage to build his company and to create wealth even more. That's what credit's all about, dude.
Yeah, man. I need to get you to analyze my credit. I think I'm at a 740 maybe. I need to be in the 800s. The only reason I'm not is because
you're slacking, Brandon. We got to get you to 850, man.
Yeah, I'm constantly in and out with credit. I'm buying, I'm selling, I'm buying, I'm selling. It's jacking my crap up. But
no, you're not jacked up. Yeah, I mean, you, as long as you are, and here's the deal. Like the best credit score out there is an 850, right? That's the very best credit you can get, 850. But after you're over 740, who gives a flying, you know what? Get over 740, you got the best tier possible. 850 is just an overachiever. You're probably one of those kids that got all A's in school that had to copy up in high school.
I kind of was. I not to brag, but I didn't have to study. Like everything just came easy to me for whatever reason. My mom and dad didn't drop me on the head, thankfully. Well, what's some so for people that are just new to the game of investing, people mm-hmm. that are new to home ownership, people that are new to real estate, period. What's some basic financial literacy outside of credit and some of the things we've already talked about? What's some basic financial literacy that people can start with to gain knowledge so that they can become more resourceful with their knowledge and wealth?
Well, the first thing that you can do is buy my book. No, I'm kidding. It's not out yet. I am writing a book. I'm going to let you know when it comes out. But the first thing is just learn. There are free resources out there. You can go to myfreshcredit.com and I've got a whole page under credit education. Mm-hmm. So the first thing is learn. The second thing is, nobody's going to do this, but I'm going to say it anyway. There's something called the Fair Credit Reporting Act. So this is actually a book. I don't have it with me in front of me, but it's actually a book that's put out by the U.S. government that shows you all the rules that the credit reporting agencies have to follow when they report information on your credit. And people don't know the rules, and they don't know their rights. So you gotta learn the basics. And as from a sophomoric, a superficial aspect, one of the first things just understand is how credit scoring works. There's five categories that affects your credit. And I try to dispel all the inaccuracies out there that people don't know. Like for instance, someone thinks, you know, oh, I'm going to pay off my car loan. That's going to make my score boost up. Newsflash. It's not. It's not going to make your score boost. It may actually hurt your score.
That's why
this is the way the credit rules work.
Yeah, that's why my credit score is low because I paid off all my vehicles. I've got everything paid off except my primary residence.
Yeah, yeah. It hurts your score when you pay something off because now your credit, the length of your credit actually has reduced because you paid off a car loan. Mm-hmm. So car loans are not factored in there the same way as credit cards are. When you pay a credit card down, oh, that's a huge dramatic increase in your score. So learning the rules of credit, you can look it up. You can go to the internet. You can go to my website and be knowledgeable about how credit works. Look, I'll give you like three nuggets out there. Credit utilization. You want to keep your credit under 10% utilization. Now, some people have heard 30%, but the way the FICO scoring works is most people with 800 and over credit scores have a utilization under 9%. So the credit bureaus are going to score your report based on what everyone else is doing that has the highest credit. So aim for 9% credit utilization. Number two, don't open up any new credit cards if you don't need to. Because the more credit cards you have, more accounts you have open, the lower your length of credit is. So that's actually going to hurt you. And then number three, the best thing to do is really pay all your freaking bills on time and don't over leverage yourself. You start paying bills late, it jacks up your credit. I mean, if you pay, okay, here's a scenario. You could have had credit for, 10 years. Say you've got an account for 10 years, you've paid it on time every single month, no blemishes, right? So you've got the credit for paying all those things on time, but you get one late on your credit, your score can drop 75 points. Yeah. Is that right? Is that fair? I don't know. I don't know, but I'll tell you this, the FICO scoring model was created by two really smart engineers. It was an engineer and a mathematician. It was created back in the 50s. And what FICO is it's a model, it's a scoring model that predicts your chance of default. So it's a three-digit number that's going to tell a lender, are you a good person to lend money to, and am I going to get my money back? It's your financial report card, if you will. That's what your FICO score is. So it starts at 350, 450, 350 and goes to 850. So that's your scoring. Anything 350, everyone, if you have a pulse, you're going to have a 500 score. But the lowest score I've seen is 378. So you can have terrible credit. But, folks with low credit are really people who don't have a lot of accounts. So all they have to be judged on is their negative credit history. So start there. Start with knowing, pay your bills on time. Keep your credit utilization under 10%. Don't overextend yourself. Don't open up a lot of credit cards if you don't need them. And if you're just starting out, talk to a family member or a parent about adding you on as a piggyback, as an authorized user. When you add yourself on as an authorized user to someone's account, they benefit from all your good credit history. Now, caution, you get the good, the bad, and the ugly too. So if that person who you get added on to that account started maxing out the cards or paid late, you're going to get late payments too. It's going to jack your credit up. So be wise. It's a double-edged sword. Be wise in who you get added on to. Make sure it's a responsible person. And, with my credit coaching clients, when you come aboard with me, I'll hook you up with guaranteed approval credit cards. And that's one of the strategies. It's not about just, fixing your credit. It's about getting the bad stuff off, but it's also about getting good stuff on there too and rebuilding your credit. So I've got relationships with certain credit card companies that have guaranteed approval. They'll get you on your credit card as a primary account holder with a $5,000 credit limit. And this is high-level strategy stuff here. You get added on to that account and you start building credit history. So we're working on your credit to remove the negative, inaccurate stuff. We'll suggest you get added on as an authorized user. We'll help you get some primary user accounts to build your credit. The goal here is to get you from not being a good credit risk to being a great credit risk and building from there and educating you along the way.
Well, dude, honestly, you're a wonderful teacher. You should speak on this. you do any speaking or anything like that?
Yeah, actually, I've done a couple seminars recently. Yeah, I speak as much as I can. I'm on the radio. I'm on a radio show in Birmingham. It's a nationally syndicated show. And nice segue. I got a radio show that's starting next month, April 11th on 108 Power 108.9. It's called Mortgage Talk with Mike. We'll talk about all things finance, all things mortgage, how to.
You didn't know what's funny is that sounds like we prepared for that, but we really didn't.
I know, right?
We did not plan that. That was so funny.
It's going to be my first radio show, so I'm excited about it. But I'll try to let everyone know about it. And the point of my radio show is going to be education, give away value, give away content, yeah. Really letting folks know, look, the rules are stacked against you. Understand the rules so you can win the game. That's really what we're going to be talking about.
Sure. So let's.
I got to have you on the show, dude.
Dude, I'm down. Let me know when, good. And we'll talk whatever.
Good.
So let's switch gears a little bit. What do you think about today's economy? I know you've talked about interest rates in today's time, but what do you think about the coronavirus, today's economy, and what that may do or not do to people's credit?
Well, you know, as I was going to say, my crystal ball broke in 2008. So I can't predict the future. I don't know. But here's what I'll say. In this current coronavirus atmosphere, we are being consumed by fear, speculation, and emotion. We don't know. Folks don't know. Almost everyone I talk to are at home working remotely. They're working remotely because they can't be in any office setting where there's more than 10 people. And that's prudence. I think that's wise to do.
Sure.
So what we're seeing right now is, I mean, this is uncharted waters. This is unprecedented times. This is nothing like 2008. This is nothing like 9/11. This is totally different. So the market is being driven by emotion and the fear right now. So you think about these hedge fund managers who are investing trillions of dollars. They control trillions of dollars. 2% of the wealth is controlled. I mean, 98% of the wealth is controlled by 2% of the people. Yeah. So you've got enormous amounts of money being moved from stocks to treasury bonds to cash. And what that's doing is upsetting the market. And it's very illogical what's going on now. So the only thing I can say is this too shall pass. We're going to get through all of this and just be ready for some ups and downs. Look, this is the new norm, right? We're working out of our house. We've got this social distancing that we have. We can't be around a lot of people. We can't go to the gym. Life has changed temporarily. So big picture perspective, rates are great. Rates are the lowest they've ever been. Right. Mortgages are available. We've got money. The Federal Reserve met in an emergency meeting last Sunday, and they decided to infuse banks with $700 billion. That's outside of the $1 trillion stimulus package that they're discussing now. So the Federal Reserve has decided to put $700 billion into banking. And what's that? And I don't want to get too complicated, but what that does is it increases capacity, so the ability for banks to lend, and increases liquidity, the money amount of money we have to lend. So the Federal Reserve said, here's $700 billion. They started with the first installment on Monday. They gave $50 billion. And they told banks also, and a lot of folks don't even know this, they told banks, hey, that 10% reserve requirement that you have, basically that means if you deposit $100 into the bank can invest your money, up to 90% of your money, into other investments. That's how they make money. When you deposit $100 into the bank, that's a liability.
That's fractional, what's that called? Fractional reserve.
Yeah.
Forgot the term.
That's the right train of thought. Yeah. So when they invest that money, when you invest that money, when you deposit the money into the bank, it's an investment. It's a debt on the bank's books. So they take your money and invest it somewhere else. They make a return on your money. They take your $90 and put it somewhere else and make more money than $90. That's how they make money. That's cool. That's the Federal Reserve's requirements. So they make you keep 10% on hold that you cannot invest. What the Reserve did on Sunday, and people aren't even talking about this, they removed the 10% requirement, a reserve requirement. So now banks can invest your entire $100 into their investments, into real estate or bonds or whatever they want to invest into. So the Reserve, I mean, it was an emergency meeting and it's historic. They've never done that before. So now maybe it's going to work. I hope it's going to work. But look, we'll get past this. The U.S. is a strong economy. You're going to get past this. So don't hide. You know, we're going to be in our little quarantine lives here. And maybe this video, maybe this video conferencing is going to be the new norm. But, you know, whatever, dude. We'll get past this. We got to be strong and vigilant. So yeah. It's not time to sit back and quell in our fears. Let's get through this. Let's follow the recommendations of leadership. And the market is going to adjust itself. We're going to be fine. But don't hold back. If you want to buy a house, buy a freaking house. If you want to invest, invest. Yeah. Rates are great. You can get into a mortgage if you want to.
Dude, it's such a perfect timing for business and business owners. You know, I am not neglecting that some people will be affected that have to physically be at a job. But yeah. This is the perfect timing for not only for you to get to know who your spouse is, who's living in your house, get to know each other again. We're going to see a rise in baby population. We're going to see a rise in divorces. I mean, I don't know if that's positive right there, but I mean, a lot of things are going to start happening, and this new norm, we're going to start seeing, I kind of think maybe we'll see society change. Maybe there'll be more work at home jobs. Like the people that were holding on wanted your physical presence. Now they're okay with you going home because maybe the companies didn't tank if, you know, as long as it's short lived and so on.
Right.
But
let me say this, Brandon. Let me interject for a sec. And one thing I want to make sure that I don't have a lack of sympathy. I mean, you mentioned there's folks out there in service related jobs, right out of a job. Anybody in hospitality, anyone in fast food service, restaurant industry, barkeeping, travel industry, folks are going to be hurting. Mm-hmm. I get that. I'm very sympathetic. And let's not talk about the effects of the coronavirus. There's some folks who know someone who's actually ill from the coronavirus. I mean, I pray that everyone that I know and everyone out there is going to recover from it. But there's going to be a lot of ill effects from this. I'm not negating that. I'm very sympathetic to that. So my heart goes out to you if you're in one of the service-related industries. I mean, it's affecting anyone, everyone. You know, it affects me. It affects you. It affects, you know, my best friend, the doctor. It affects, you know, he's got to see patients. So he's got to make sure his health is good and taken care of. It affects everyone. So I'm very sympathetic about it. But, you know, again, I can fall back on this too shall pass. We can't have our lives run by fear. Put our faith upstairs with God and know that he's going to protect us. We're going to get through this and we just have to remain vigilant. So, you know, I just want to make sure that folks know that I know some folks are going through some real tough times. And you know, the Treasury stepping in. You know, leadership for the federal government is stepping in. I heard something about the Andrew Yang plan that may be incorporated. I don't know if you heard that. They're going to give out $1,000 to every American.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Maybe that'll infuse money into the economy. I hear that some lenders may put a moratorium on mortgage payments. You know, don't quote me on that. It may be happening. It may not. I don't know. Sure. But look, we'll get through this. So if you come, worst comes to worst, and you've got to figure out, okay, what bills do I pay? The first thing, if you got more bills than at the end of the month than you've got money, call your creditors. Back when we had the government shutdown last year, creditors suspended payments. A lot of your credit card companies suspended payments if you were a furloughed government employee. So this virus, and I don't want to say the virus, but the fear of the virus, right, is affecting everyone more dramatically than the shutdown did last year. So call your creditors if you're having payment problems. Call them. They may have priority strategies in place that help you protect your credit. But I'm telling you, beg, borrow, steal, make a phone call, do what the heck you got to do, protect your credit during this period. But protect your credit at all costs. So you want to make your house payments. You want to make your credit card payments. You know, you want to make your car payments. Make the things that are reporting to your credit bureaus, to the credit reporting agencies, make those a priority. Make those payments. But, you know, your gas bill, your light bill, you got to make those payments, but call them up. Work out a payment plan. They'll work with you. They're not going to shut off your lights, especially in this environment. You know, I'm not going to let fear consume me, and I know you're not either.
Yeah. Well, that's a perfect way to end the podcast specifically. I like to do the traditional podcast thing where we have rapid fire questions just so we can get to know who Mike is outside of his profession. And his
story. I'll try. I'm not good with rapid fire. I'm a little long winded, but go ahead.
Yeah. What's, and I'm a pop culture junkie. I wanted to be an actor growing up. Somehow I got into real estate. So my stuff is mostly about pop culture and stuff like that. But What's your favorite movie or documentary, and why?
A favorite movie documentary?
Movie or documentary, or hell, a mockumentary. What's your favorite movie or documentary, or why? And why?
I mean, An Officer and a Gentleman is my favorite movie. No, number one is Officer and a Gentleman. Number two is Contact. Contact is a sci-fi movie. I just love that movie. I just love it.
Yeah, cool. What's your favorite book and why?
My favorite book is, this may be mirrored, but yeah. Think and Grow Rich. Number one book that needs to be on your book mantle. Best book ever. Come up with a goal, a specific goal for wealth. I need every entrepreneur in the world's got this book.
Yeah, I've got it right behind me. Yeah. I love that. What's something that you like? What kind of music do you like to just elevate your mood with?
Classical music.
Classical. That's why you're so smart, man.
I love it. I love classical music. Good. Oh, it gets my heart going, brother. I love it.
All right. I'm not sure how old you are, but let's just say you were going to give advice to your 20-year-old self. What kind of advice would you give your 20-year-old self?
I'm proud, baby. Baby, I'm 50 years old this year. I'll be 50 in November.
You look like you're 35. Come on, man.
I appreciate you. But I'll be 50 years old this year. And the advice I'd give my 20-year-old self is to start early in real estate investing. Start early.
Okay. What about your 35-year-old self since you're 50?
My 35-year-old self, what was I doing? 35-year-old self is prosperity does not last forever. There's my second favorite book is right here. Anyway, there's a book called Who Moved My Cheese? It's by Ken Blanchard, I believe. Who Moved My Cheese? Get it. It's a 20-minute read. It talks about that pile of cheese represented by prosperity is not always going to be there. Recognize the early signs. If that pile of cheese goes down, find you another pile of cheese. That's what I would taught my 35-year-old self.
Gotcha. Okay, well, let's just end with this. Two more questions. What's one last piece of advice you would give the audience here, your audience and my audience, about what's going on in the world? And you've already said so much. You've already given us so much wisdom, but if you were to put something on a billboard for today's timing, what would you say?
Don't panic.
It's perfect. Perfect. Don't panic. Perfect. Well, where can people find you, Mike? Where can people find out who you are, what you're all about, where, what kind of businesses you own and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So if you need to reach me, you can go to myfreshcredit.com. That's my credit repair site. If you need a loan application, we really didn't even talk about me being a mortgage broker. It's my first love.
We'll have to bring you back.
Yeah, another time. But you can go to Mike, my first name, Mike Closes. That's what I do. I close. MikeCloses.com.
Perfect. What about Instagram, Facebook, Twitter? You own any social?
Let's see. Instagram, Mike Closes on Instagram. Facebook, Mike Closes on Facebook as well. And if you need to reach me on my phone, the number is 866-883-1710.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much, Mike, for coming in.
And thanks for having me, man.
Absolutely. Have a great day and stay corona-free, unless you want to drink a beer.